Ah. Oh, yeah. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, me, Dr. Tim Slecker, and, of course, chairman of the board, Jacob. Yeah, that's him. As Johnny says, choo-choo, chairman of the board, Jacob. Classes in session.
Dog at the desk.
We
shoot chairman of the board.
There he is.
Jacob.
We got him back. I can't get enough of Randy Weingarten. You know, we had such, you know, great classes in session last week leading into an incredible Saturday 1 hour with Randy Weingarten, president of AFT, talking about her new book, Why Teachers Fear Fascists. And so much that kind of went on in
Why fascists fear teachers?
Slight edit. Thank you, Johnny. You know, and, you know, as a teacher, I do fear fascists. But anyway, so much that happened during that interview that I am thinking it escapes me, like what happened, some of those things, you know, because you're deep in a conversation, right? And you're throwing it out there, you're going back and forth. And it's like sometimes, you know, I know we can always listen to it back, but I'm thinking Jacob, chairman of the board, witnessed, listened to, saw the whole thing. Jacob, what is your most memorable moment from the Randy Weingarten interview? Or where do you think, you know, Tim really screwed up and could have asked a better question? Or, you know, Johnny was just, he was just Johnny.
Yeah. Jacob. Tim, I don't know what you were thinking with the setup you gave Johnny for his internet, but that was a huge mistake on your part for that episode. That shined through to me because usually Johnny's chiming in way too much. This time, not enough. So we need to find a healthy balance where we can have all the Johnny we want on the show. For me, I enjoyed the episode. The thing I really liked about it as producer Jacob, choo-choo, chairman of the board, I have many names. I'm very famous. What I try to bring to the program when I talk with you guys and when I contribute is trying to find ways to take your highfalutin, smart, big brain pedagogy and bring it down to a level that a non-educator can understand and help get those messages out to people who might not be totally steeped in this world. And I liked that Randy's book is one that works for teachers to read, but it's also something that a non-teacher can read and gain understanding of education and what it's like to be a teacher and the problems being faced. So I saw something there that relates to what we do here, and it's shared in common with the book. I thought that was cool. I thought good episode. It really matched our mission here. So I had a good time with that, Tim.
I like that. I like that. Man, leave it to Jacob to actually come up with a novel, new, fresh take on some of the stuff that we've been doing here for lots of years at Busted Pencils. I just think about the fact that, you know, what was discussed there. For me, you know, the part of the interview, and I had saved it and waited, and finally I think I got it in the third section, this third segment of the show, was, you know, her recounting of the paperclip movement in Norway with the Nazi occupation of Norway during World War II, and, you know, recounting and retelling that story of teachers being the resistance to, like, real-time fascism at that time. And the simplicity of their movement of simply just wearing a paperclip in defiance of that takeover, you know, it really makes me wonder, you know, what is that next paperclip movement that might be coming? And I ask that question because I think when more and more teachers and more people concerned about public schools and teaching start reading this, I'm thinking there might be a potential resurgence of some kind of a new paperclip movement and moment, where teachers kind of go like, whoa, wait a minute. Yeah, man, enough is enough. And what does it mean to resist? Actually, resistance, the strongest, most, you know, kind of, what do you want to say, effective, is simplicity. Simplicity, but it is around solidarity. But to do it only requires a simple type of action, a simple type of statement, some kind of, you know, move or demonstration. And that the act of that simplicity is what speaks volumes about a resistance movement. That to me is where I just keep coming back to, because, you know, I think teachers are the catalyst for a thriving democracy. And what a great time right now in the middle of a totalitarian type of takeover of teaching. Some simple solidarity-driven union resistance that really is unoffensive, other than to say, we resist. Johnny, that's my take, man.
Tim, I like that. And I admire your romanticism of resistance in that. But I think we're on the same page. We just maybe see the dream a little bit differently in terms of that takeaway from things. I think I'm similar, and I like the way Randy really writes about it in the book. And it's not a spoiler alert now for folks who will have heard, you know, Saturday's great interview and discussion with Randy. And then, you know, hopefully soon they'll be able to get copies of the book and read along. But, you know, teaching is really thoughtfully defined in that book. And they talked about, you know, the different, like, what do teachers do really on the, and why is it that fascist fear teachers? Why is that? What's that hook? Like, what does that mean? And, you know, it talks about that teaching is more than just like being a math teacher or, you know, teaching, you know, sentence structures in English language arts classes or history. Those are all wonderful and great content area related things, like passing on knowledge to a next generation. Okay, we're starting to get a little bit more towards the domains that Randy talks about, right? That teachers in particular create opportunities, right? Which is true. Like, they're at the epicenter of where opportunities begin for, if you're going to be an astronaut, the things you learned in schools that contribute towards that. You know, if you're going to be a nurse, if you're going to be a barber, whatever the thing is. Because, Tim, I like that you situate teachers at the forefront of things. But what they are to me is they're irreplaceable workers that bring together the people, the different professions and careers that were opportunities that began somewhere in a classroom or by sparked interest or inspiration from a teacher. And that's democracy, is this wide range of contributing citizens who are passionate about what they do, who contribute to the economy, whose labor is, you know, irreplaceable, their innovation and all the different things, whether they're, you know, part of the medical field or part of the tech industry or part of, you know, I'm grasping here, you know, the skilled trades, all of the things that people do started somewhere likely really close to a great teacher. And I'd like to say that every kid has had a great teacher. Hopefully, listener, you have had at least one great teacher, because Tim and I, we joke a lot about how many bad teachers we had. But one of the things we definitely had is we each had a handful of really great teachers that made opportunities for us to be who we are today. The other thing, Tim, is this is where we converge, that Randy talks about, is that teachers belong to something bigger than themselves, not just the democracy, but they belong to teachers' unions, which isn't like a plug for, hey, man, let's protest because we're a union, although that's part of it. It's you belong. Our world is so fractured and so individualized for everybody out there, no matter what your profession. We are constantly feeling further and further apart from one another as a whole, right? We're divided. Divided, we fall. United, we stand. Mm. Randy talks about that teachers' unions have a long history dating, and you could read the book. There's a brief history of teachers' unions in there too, which I loved being a union history nerd, but that goes back to teachers saying it's so important that we are not divided on these really important matters of what it's like to be a teacher, but also how we care for children as they become adults in this country. And if teachers don't have a say in that, we're in big trouble. So Randy culminates as part of the book, although there's a chapter after that, but she says part of being a teacher is belonging to something. And it's not just public education, but it's belonging to a group of teachers, a family of teachers, a union. Doesn't even happen that maybe it's not the AFT. Randy's the president of the AFT, but it's belonging to, you know, a group. Maybe it's your local, like WEA, right? I'm sure there's the Wisconsin Educators Association. Like in Michigan, there was a Michigan Educators Association. Those are teacher unions at the state level, right? But you belong to a group of people who share the same experience and have a set of expert skills that ought to have a say in the profession that Tim and I are both saying are absolutely irreplaceable to a strong democracy. You got to have great teachers in order to have a strong democracy. You can't be a strong nation without great teachers. So part of that, what we do as teachers is we union together. And I don't mean that necessarily in the stereotype of how many people might hear unions. Unions aren't perfect, just like schools aren't perfect, just like families aren't perfect. Perfection isn't the goal. It's about the act of solidarity, of being united. So, Tim, whether that's kind of what you mean by a paperclip moment.
Yeah.
Like I am, this might shock you. I am like the last man to believe that another protest is going to do anything in this context. Having been now to, I don't know how many dozen in my teacher lifetime, just on education, like our collective voice, it's important. I'm not saying don't do it, but to me, the simplest thing is that we begin to really union together. Now that might be participating in your union, but it means showing solidarity, building trust and relationships in your school, across your district, across your state, on what it means to be a teacher, and that you should have a voice in the kinds of ways that we teach. And boom, hey, historically, that's been what unions do for our profession and for our country. So I'm excited about that small thing. I think big things are easy to take out by like fascists like big things.
You know what though? I don't think we converge at all. Actually too, just a little bit more clarity. I too have been Johnny over the years. In fact, was even one of the impetus of one of the, you know, big movements, the opt-out movement. I've been part of these, you know, big organized, you know, kind of, I guess you want to say, you know, protests, movements that were, you know, planned. And I've seen them, you know, like you, not work, not do a darn thing. You know, it was great to get together in Washington, D.C. for 2 summers with opt-out parents and teachers and stuff like that. You know, we had a ball. We got to, you know, really believe we were doing something. And, you know, we marched. We got good pictures. You know, type into Google opt-out movement, Occupy the DOE pictures, and you probably find some of them. But it didn't do anything. And it's potentially what I was saying that, you know, the paperclip, Johnny, was really more that solidarity symbol that really didn't come necessarily from a planned, organized protest. It was that sense of solidarity that you're talking about that inspired that kind of, you know, unioning that you're talking about and coming together. And so, you know, because yeah, the last thing, what was it, a 90s song or something? Last thing we need is another protest song. I can't think of it.
Well, I think those are important things to have, like protest, yeah, protest songs and things. I just think like we ought not lose sight. And now I think we're saying the same thing. We ought not lose sight of the things that bring us together and that are hard to see and name and to stop, right? Because if I say, hey, this is what we're doing and this is what it looks like and this is what it's going to be, and if it threatens, you know, if it strengthens democracy and threatens tyranny, I think I said that word right. I don't have a producer just to like help me with my words. Tyranny and tyranny.
No, tyranny, man. We tyranny. Fixed you.
I said it right.
Yeah you did it, man. You did it.
Yeah. So, but the idea here being like, this is, I think, like you said, kind of a commonplace thing that unifies us, brings us together to say enough is enough. And we are strengthening our response to the need for our really important work that we're seeing threatened in so many ways. And that's one of the things to come back around to for me, the book. I've been a teacher for, you know, over 25 years now. And I teach teachers. I write about education. We talk about education all the time on this show. Right? I mean, I have a passion for it, and I love to describe it and talk about it and understand it in all kinds of ways. But I will even admit, and I had talked to you and Randy about this in the interview, sometimes I feel really spun around. And it's hard to describe what we do as teachers. You know, and I could say I'm a math teacher, or I teach, you know, pre-calculus at the high school, and I coach, you know, track. I can give kind of common descriptions of what I do. And then people will have had an experience of like, oh, he's probably this kind of teacher. I went to school. I know a little bit about what teachers do. But it's such a like sliver in the spotlight of how teachers are portrayed in media. You know, and Jacob's asked us some really thoughtful questions over the last month about like, who are some of our favorite teachers? What are some of our favorite moments? What are some of our worst moments in schools? Also, what are the teachers that inspired us in movies and we kind of think about when we're watching TV shows? Because I think we're all onto something here. Teachers aren't often understood for the work they do. And so this book was a renewed way of being like, wow, you know, that's a really succinct way describing the work we do as teachers and a way of communicating it to whatever it is out there that you do, to understanding that teachers don't just teach your kids to read or, you know, come up with these really radical ideas like, you know, I'm going to assign a special art project and instead of calling it a snowman, I'm going to call it a snow person because I have a woke agenda and I want to rile up my neighborhood. You know, like they're not out there plotting these things like often it's portrayed in the media. Right. But our response to it is always like, I always feel like as a veteran teacher, I'm even on my heels. Like, I'm like, no, because we're doing this and we're doing, and it's like I'm spun around describing what teachers do. And this book helped me nail it down. Like, this is succinctly what it is we do. Here's a couple of sentences that I can share in my community that folks can better understand my profession without buying into the hype. Was it Public Enemy? It said, don't believe the hype, right? So don't believe the hype. Read the book.
Read the book.
And you'll better understand what it is.
You just, man, you hit something there how I was trying to imagine. It's just like, look, you know, I'm not talking about organizing a movement to get back to teaching DEI to all of these, you know, as you said, snow people and things like that. That work was work that was meaningful because of what Randy talks about, because it's the idea of bringing people together, of understanding differences. The work of a teacher, the work of a teacher was not woke indoctrination of different genders, of how we communicate with people's pronouns versus where they've come from. That work actually maybe got moved in a way that it was able to be demonized, as opposed to really recognizing what, you know, DEI, gender, all of these things. These were just ways of teaching for tolerance, for acceptance, for harmony, of what it means to live in a world that has so many different people, so many different ways of seeing the world, so many different histories, so many different views, that Randy's book reminds us of that was the work we were engaged in. Now,
it's auxiliary to that we work to teach critical thinking.
Right.
So if you're thinking critically about the world, you're engaged in, whether you agree with it or not, you're able to think through and engage in a civil discourse around these important differences in our beliefs and in our communities and in who and how we represent ourselves in our groups. The second thing being, if you're a teacher, right, you provide a safe and welcoming environment for learners. That's part of what we do. I said she defines the career and the labor. So if you're doing these two things, which is only two, I won't spoil all of them for readers, but two of the chapters, you know, teach critical thinking, as part of that also provide a safe and welcoming learning environment. So that's why I said it regrounded me, because I have been off arguing. It's so important that we, you know, value diversity, equity, and inclusion. These are absolutely mainstays of democracy. They're absolutely so important. But I got pulled away from the core, being like, why I do this as a teacher isn't because of my political beliefs. It's because of the labor of my profession to teach critical thinking, to provide a safe learning environment for all my students, right? To be present at opportunities, to make opportunities for young people, right? And to be in community with other teachers, right? So these are those big four areas. And to me, that's where it's like, wow, helps bring me back to, Tim, what you're saying. Like, the reason we did all of these things wasn't to be in a so-called culture war against a particular administration. It was to do our job.
It was to do,
Like when I was a plumber, my job was to stop the leak, right? And so, like, if part of stopping the leak also meant wiping up water that got out of the way, like, it was just part of the job.
Right.
So stopping the leak for us teachers is handling that there are different people who are coming to our classrooms who deserve a safe space to learn in, right? Who it's going to be, like, engaging critically in disagreement and finding moments of agreement, but being able to do that well. That's what we teach. So, again, we're going on and on about it. Get the book.
Get the book.
Why Fascists Fear Teachers, right? Randy Weigarn, AFT president. If you're listening to this class in session and you hadn't listened to last Saturday's broadcast, well, go and download that, because you're like, what are these two dudes talking about, right? And with that, Tim, man, let's kick it to you to end this one.
Well, and now it's time for your moment of zen. While some people think that dissent is unpatriotic, I would argue that dissent is the highest form of patriotism.
Hey, I love it, my guys and my gals out there listening to today's class in session. And if you want more Busted Pencils podcasts, we'll just head on over to Apple, Spotify, or you can always get at us at civicmedia.com or on our website, bustedpencils.com. Remember, you can always find great Busted Pencils content every Monday for homeroom, Wednesdays for class in session, and on Fridays for producer Jacob's Choice. And of course, Pencil Busters, You're going to tune in on Saturdays and listen to the Busted Pencils weekend broadcast at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the civic media networks for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep Busted Pencils.